Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 8th of December, Anno Domini 2012, and you lucky people. You're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Rick Harrison.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues, have some booze, it's Charleston Shoes.
And you said that all in one mouthful.
And all in one breath, because they didn't have a mouthful of Charles. Do they even still make them?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Google.
I don't know. That's all right. We don't need to know right now. We'll find out shortly. Somebody will call in, I'm sure, put it in the IRC chat. These people know everything. We're going to be doing all the usual nonsense today. Before we get started, I think it's important to note that we have a distinguished author in our presence.
Oh, well, thank you.
Today we have Rick Harrison has his own app in the Apple App Store. Why don't you talk just a moment about that?
Okay.
So if you have any questions about app development, here's your guy to talk to.
Yes, the app is in the App Store. It's for the Apple iPad, and I developed it using Live Code. Some of you may be familiar with that particular software.
It's essentially the grandchild of HyperCard.
Basically, that's what it is, except it's on steroids.
Yeah, clearly it is.
And it's also cross-platform, which makes it a lot of fun. But the name of my app is called Idea Phrase Creator. And if you search for that in the Apple App Store, you will find it. And the idea behind it is that it will randomly generate short phrases or full complete sentences, and you can also adjust those sentences. You can edit them. You can change the order of the parts of speech if you like, hours and hours of fun. And the best part is it's great for creative writers and for inventors and for students and teachers. And,
all right, we can't make this an ad. I just wanted people to understand your bona fides in terms of knowing that we have a guy here who actually is an app creator, and if you have any app creation questions, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. And, of course, you can call us with questions, and in the meantime, while you're considering what to do, I'll read you the news. It was 20 years ago on Monday, December 3rd, that the first text message was sent. Neil Papworth used a PC to send an early Christmas greeting to the cell phone of Richard Jarvis of Vodafone. Since then, there have been trillions of texts shuttled around the globe, each delivering their messages in 160 characters or less. But as the text message turns 20, the key question is whether the venerable short message service, also known as SMS, is already over the hill. After all, it has all kinds of rivals. Those looking to save costs can use WhatsApp. Apple's iPhone will automatically convert messages sent from another iPhone to its own iMessage format, while services like Skype and FaceTime offer the ability to add video in the mix. And after years of gigantic growth, overall text message volume is starting to decline, although total messages sent each year still measure in the trillions. But despite the fact that rivals can boast cheaper prices and additional service, the SMS has something that all its challengers lack: ubiquity. Nearly everybody with a basic cell phone can send and receive a text, meaning that one can send a message without having to know what kind of phone is at the other end. SMS has also proven remarkably hardy. Text messages can often get through even when calls won't, making them popular to let family members know that one is safe in a disaster. The cell phone carriers who have made billions of dollars from short texts are keen to stem the tide away from SMS and onto third-party services. For years now, the carriers have been working on something known as rich communication services, which would add a variety of new capabilities to carrier messaging while aiming to recreate the interoperability of SMS. But it all comes back to that ubiquity. At any rate, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remember, is the text message turns 20. And your poll choices are, I live via text messages. I send and get a lot of them. I've sent a few here and there, and I can barely make a phone call. So far, we've got about 37 of them, and in general, conversant with our group, if, most of you can barely make a phone call. But when you're done, I know you'll have more to say. So when you are done picking your poll choice, check the yellow box underneath the poll. Click on Give Us Your Opinion. It will take you to my website, AskNick.com. That's AskNick.com. And the question there is, how do you do short, simple messaging? And, of course, that's our question to you. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free, 1-800-790-0415.
I live by texting.
Many
I mean,
people do.
You know, it's just so easy, you know, especially with me, you know, trying to get a hold of distributors or anything else, than to play the phone maze. And just quick text them, oh, you know, I need to order this or that, order that. Just quick send a message. They just, okay, and boom, few seconds.
My daughter lives by texting, So she will text me as often as anything else. And what I've really discovered, I agree with you. If something is not absolutely urgent, and I don't care if they get it now or an hour from now, I'll send a text.
Yeah.
Because it means that I'm not disturbing them. It's actually politer to send a text than it is to call someone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, well, I don't know. I would kind of disagree with that. And that's probably just because I'm not a text user. And the last thing I want is people sending me texts that pop up on my screen and say, oh, you have a text message from so-and-so while I'm doing my app development.
Well, right. Well, but that's the point. The fact is, you can ignore. Maybe you can't. Maybe you're too OCD
I can't,
to do that,
especially under Mountain Lion.
Yeah, right, but the idea being that let me give Rick a call and see what he's doing. You know what? He's probably working. I'll send him a text saying when you're free.
Mm-hmm. Send me an email.
Give me a call. Well, yes, but are you? Well, for you,
yeah,
yes, because I assume you're working at home. But if I know somebody's out and about.
Out and about, I suppose a text message is okay.
Yeah.
But you have to know that I'm out and about.
And
it's just so much easier to just run a quick text from your phone than sit there and say, like you said, give me a call when you're free.
Yep.
And, you know, again, it has to do, I can do email from my phone too.
Yep.
You know, but a text is just so much easier. Hey, give me a call when you're free, or about this when you have a moment.
I have written a little app that lets me set reminders to myself, so I can do it through the computer, I can do it from my phone, so I can send myself a reminder that says, it you know, at 2:30 on January 5th, 2:30 p.m. remind me blah 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 blah.
Yeah, see, on the Mac I use iCal, and iCal sends me those,
but that's
text
if
messages.
You're on the Mac.
Yeah,
I'm
well,
out
that's
and
right.
about and doing stuff all day long
on a tablet,
and sometimes or on the tablet or whatever, but half the time I'm standing around talking to somebody, and they'll say, give me a call on Tuesday. I can put it in my calendar, but I can also send myself a reminder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, reminders work very well.
You know, and so.
But iCal also works with your, you know, iDevices that are out there as well. It works on your touch and on your iPhone. And
yep.
It'll
send However, it takes
reminders.
Me longer to set something up in a calendar.
Well,
than it does
it might.
Send myself a reminder that gets.
Some things
dealt
are easier
with.
From a user's standpoint.
Yeah.
And,
but it doesn't matter. The point is, billions and billions of people.
Thank God for I use Google Calendar.
Yeah, so do I. Yeah, so do I. And it does that for me. But sometimes, and I can actually set my favorite thing about Google Calendar is I can actually set appointments in Google Calendar via text message.
Mm-hmm.
I can send a text message to Google Calendar, and it will then put it on the thing. So mm-hmm. I've actually stopped developing my my reminder thing because I use the Google Calendar to do all that.
Well, it's saved my butt so many times because I do suffer from craft.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Remembering, you know, other different appointments or my grandkids' birthdays and everything. I'm close. I know the month, but, you know, sometimes I'm not always good on the date. But with this, you know, I have them send it out, you know, like 4 days ahead of time to remind me. Get a card or that out, or and then give them a call on that day because it reminds me that day also. But and other things.
Yep.
It's just so much easier. Just throw it in there, and no matter where I am, my phone at home or on my Nexus, I can pull it up.
Yep.
And look at it. And the same with here at the jazz station. We've got a calendar here that, you know, if we need Rob needs somebody to fill in or something like that on a different shift, and that we got the calendar in view and say, tell you what, I can fill in on this one and that. You know, so a lot of great uses.
Yep.
Now, I use it sort of like a bill minder. So if my Visa bill is coming up, you know, I have it send me a reminder message, you know, a week before. It says, oh, by the way, your Visa bill's coming up. You might want to take care of that.
I do that for, like, the stuff for, like, garbage. That comes every quarterly. So on quarterly things, I have it set up in Google just to send me a reminder. And it's so easy to set them up.
Yep. I also have it set up. I have a to-do list at work, and it pulls the top five things out of my to-do list and texts it to me twice a day. Because I can get involved in stuff. And once I start getting involved, I'm involved.
That's right. You can forget it.
And this, and suddenly my text thing goes off, and I look at it and go, oh, yeah, my to-do list. I'll go back to that now. I'll make the decision that what I'm doing is more important than what's actually on my to-do list.
And you can table that.
And I can table it. But it reminds me, it's that gentle nudge that you don't normally get. And the to-do items are right there in front of me as well.
Yep.
So it works out. It works out pretty nicely. I do love text messaging. It's fast and convenient. And of course, I work with a company that does text messaging as their thing. So that's pretty cool. So it's a company called MyMinders, and what they do is they send out for a company who has a lot of part-time workers. You keep their schedule, but it's not about the scheduling. It's about event notification. So you're the manager. You put everybody in the schedule. One click of the button, everybody gets their schedule on their cell phone.
That's very powerful. Mm-hmm.
And that means nobody can lose it. Oh, I didn't know I was supposed to work today. Horse manure.
It's on.
Because we send it to your phone. Oh, and by the way, before every shift, we send you a reminder.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way. So, yeah, you didn't forget.
So the excuses disappear.
Exactly. Exactly. And there's all kinds of other things people can do with it. And it's, again, it's not a commercial. I don't want to get into that. But what I want to say is that everywhere we've put this in, everywhere that Shift Alerts has become a product that people are using, everybody loves it because of the convenience.
Another great tool to make your life a little easier.
Yeah.
On the other hand, you know, there's this pressure and the stress that you have to go through when you receive one of these text messages, and it's, ooh, my boss is looking over my shoulder. I have to respond to this immediately.
But it's not a response. It's just a reminder. It's your schedule. What it means is if I send you your schedule by phone, you don't have to drive in to look at the schedule.
Well, yes.
You don't have to call up, and then whoever's actually working is bothered by you instead of doing their job. If the schedule changes, you can send it out. So there's none of this. Well, how come you didn't show up Sunday morning at 8 a.m.? I changed the schedule at 7 o'clock Saturday night.
Yeah, yeah. You know? All righty.
And so for that, it's it's pretty useful. People tend to love it. There are other things that will do that. Our Chandra over in the IRC chat is saying, will Google Now help with that? Yeah, but again, you have to put it into something. What's nice about something like Shift Alerts is your manager puts it in and you get the reminder. So it works a little differently. So, and you can also, by the way, send people email, not just at their, from a phone or whatever. Google Voice will do it.
Mm-hmm.
So you can bring up Google Voice on your, browser and actually send and receive text messages through it, which is convenient, particularly if you hate typing on the quote-unquote keyboard of your phone. And also you can send a text via email. So if you know the person's phone number, all 10 digits, you can send them a phone number at, for example, if you're on Verizon, it's vtext.com. So it's pretty cool. Actually,
you know, I think a lot of people sometimes get confused between Google Voice and Google Talk.
Yes.
And then, of course, you've got their messaging system as well, right? So,
well, that's Google Voice has messaging built. Oh, Google Talk is there. Is there instant messaging? No, Google Talk is the instant messaging system. So it's for online chatting, like you do Facebook chats. It's a chatting system. Google Voice is their phone thing. So I have a Google Voice phone number. So I can make calls through Google Voice. I can send texts through Google Voice. I can.
They keep changing things, though.
No, that's the way it always was.
I don't know. I was just looking at it yesterday, and it didn't look right to me.
Yeah. But that's the way they did it. And I realized maybe you would do it the other way around. It's the naming. Don't forget, one of the problems with a lot of these companies is that the names aren't good. I can't say they aren't done by that they're done by geeks, because half the time they've hired a company to do it. But it's still a lot of these system names are just kind of silly. But not, I think, as well thought out as they could be. But at any rate, I use Google Voice for a lot of stuff. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Rick Harrison. I almost said Steve Ray. Sorry about that. Me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. We are the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's right. We're Soundbites, right here on the truly great, member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Rick Harrison.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Brian from Chick-Tawaga on the line. Welcome, Brian. What's your question?
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good. How are you?
I'm not really from Cheektowaga. I just wanted to hear you say that.
He told me to put that down.
So almost. Actually, a rare Saturday off. I get a chance to listen.
I'm glad you are.
Yeah, actually, I got a question about an old laptop with some old information on it.
Yeah.
I got a proprietary software package that I had purchased years and years and years ago. It was a pretty much a custom-built application, extensive database of wiring diagrams, electronics, things like that I use in my automotive hobby.
Right.
It's on a Windows 2000 computer laptop, mm-hmm. and there's absolutely no support for this software anymore. There's all the people who wrote it are long gone. The program's long finished. I still have the original discs, original licenses, but it won't play with any newer operating systems, and it won't, because of security reasons, load back into my a newer platform with a dual boot system.
Right.
The old laptop still functions properly, but it's just really, really slow, and of course it's going to die eventually.
Yeah, no kidding.
We're talking a 90s vintage laptop.
Sure.
Any way that you would, like I said, this is all licensed and everything like that, but there's no way to get any help with it. Any way that you guys would know of to move the entire OS, the entire contents of the hard drive over to a modern computer?
Ghost.
No. I think what he needs to do, maybe. Well, one or two things I would try.
I did. I mean, rough. I did try to ghost it and do. I get around these boxes pretty good.
Yeah.
Like I said, ghost and the copying software. And Windows 2000 doesn't really support USB that well. You've got to put in a thumb drive, boot it. It just doesn't have enough capacity to even deal with any modern software.
What I might suggest you try first is, can you at least install the software, even if it won't run on something like Windows 7?
Well, I'm not sure if it's the I think the discs that I have are so old that the discs are corrupted, or they're not. The discs don't seem to want to behave. You know, I mean, I have everything. It tries to find discs that aren't there, and it's looking for like Apache server versions that aren't there, and you know.
Yeah. If you could get the original software to install on Windows 7, you might try running. You can generally right-click on a product and say "Run as," pretends
compatibility mode,
and then pick, say, Windows XP or something. Mm-hmm. If that doesn't work, the other thing you can do, if you've got enough oomph in your machine, is run it as a virtual operating system inside Windows, using any one of the
virtual PC.
Right, Virtual PC or the Oracle One or Virtual Box or any of those. And right. then once it's running, install it there, and it should run. It should run semi okay. But honestly, if you can't even install the original discs, I don't know quite what to tell you at this point.
Right.
I don't know of anything. Maybe one of our listeners does know of anything that will let you take the entire operating system.
Well, I do have the original 2000 discs. I mean, I have an original copy of 2000, the licensed copy of that, and I put that in there. The thing is looking for support software updates and things like that. It just aren't there anymore. You know, it doesn't want to install. It just doesn't want to do anything other than it just tells me I can't find the disc that I'm looking to install.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Without any of that, without the ability, so it's going out to the website and saying, what do I do?
Right, exactly.
I don't know of any way around
it. You know, make sure I didn't hack it.
Right,
and
I don't know
no
any way around
there's no
that.
Help anywhere for it. And the thing is, it's an invaluable database of information that I would find very hard to replace.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I don't know of anything that will do that, because it's not a question at this end, right? It's a question at the other end.
Right.
And there's really no way around that unless they either released their back end as freeware and you set it up somewhere, or you bought it from them and set it up somewhere.
Right, yeah. So there's no way for me just to, like, just bring this peer-to-peer or just network this in and just move the whole package in, huh?
Well, not that I know of. I just don't right. know of a product that will do that.
Yeah, no.
Can you export any of the files?
What?
It means you're busy on a product like that, huh?
Yeah, well, that's just it. Well, but the other thing is, Rick is right. If you can, go ahead.
If you can export some of the files into some other format that you could maybe import into some other newer program,
right?
That might be another way of getting around it.
Is that hard drive still functional?
Yeah, the computer works really good. It's just very, very slow, and it's going to, you know, it just, you know.
It's old enough now that you're worried.
Well, what I was wondering is, you know, a lot of the newer machines, you can just pick a newer, a different boot device. You know,
yeah.
Boot off that hard
yes,
drive.
Yes, and that will work, but it's never going to fix the problem of what happens when that hard drive dies.
That's right.
Well,
right.
Ghost it over to a new hard drive, and then put it in a machine yeah. and have it boot as a an alternative drive.
Right. In a computer, I want to put that on. Do I have to set up a separate partition?
Well, no. Normally, you can have it boot off, you know, which drive. You can say in the BIOS, you can go in and select quite often, well, boot from this drives, because 10-1 odds, you're going to ghost it over. You'll ghost it over to a SATA drive.
Right.
And in there, you can then, in the BIOS, select which SATA drive that it boots from.
Right.
Sometimes
I
you can also...
A little bit, but I, frankly, time's at a premium for me sometimes, and
well,
you know, I didn't... You
but
know,
what you can...
I really sit down and digest. I was wondering... Yeah, I might very well just have to tackle that and see if I can't come up with something.
But an easy
line.
One, too, though, is, and a lot of newer BIOS will support it, is you'll hit F12, and it brings you up a menu, and you can select which device to boot from. So it
right,
would be
right.
listed there, and it would be just that simple. Boot off the regular C, or what the system will call the D drive, and you boot off of that one. And
right.
But that really should be a separate drive.
Yes. Oh, yes, definitely. It's got to be a separate drive.
Right. I think what I did, that sounds like something, an avenue I'll explore. I think what I did, though, is I had a thumb drive. I put it into the USB port. 2000 doesn't play with USB very well. It does support it somewhat. But
yeah, but not, you know what? Let's not dwell on what doesn't work, because it doesn't work.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's talk about what does work, which I think that would work. Certainly, you could. You know what? If you can do it yourself, or you can bring it to somebody to do it for you. You might pull that drive, put it in another machine, and ghost it from there.
Oh, you think the drive format would be the same? I know, like the desktops and stuff, they evolve. Every 2 years or something.
Yeah, but no, that'll be fine. Yeah. What'll happen is Ghost will understand the Windows 2000 format.
Even if it had different partitions, like, you know, quite often we'll ghost a compact drive that has that hidden partition. It'll do that. It's smart enough that it knows how to do that. So, yeah, if you pulled that drive and put it onto another drive and said, here, I'll ghost this old drive to this new drive, it'll handle it.
Yeah. That's not a problem. So if you do that, at least you get your stuff on a new drive,
mm-hmm.
and you can then dual boot. The other thing, and I think Rick is right about this, do a little delving into the product. If it's, for example, saving, if it's running, for example, Microsoft Access in the background, or for God's sake, DBase in the background.
I think it's very proprietary. This whole thing, it's frankly a registered GM software.
All right, then. Well, yeah. Then if you can get the data out, you'll at least have that in some way.
Right. Right.
You know, but the reality is that if you've got software that's no longer supported and no longer being sold, and every time you try to install it, it calls home, you're done.
Right, right, right.
You know, you're done in terms of reinstalling it somewhere else, and everything else becomes a kludge. And I'm okay. Shocked. I'd be shocked if somebody hasn't, do some research, because I'd be shocked if somebody, if in fact GM is no longer supporting this at all and has not replaced it with anything. I'd be shocked if somebody out there hadn't built some sort of equivalent somewhere.
Sometimes there's electronics forums you can go to out on the internet, and they can be valuable resources to show you, you know, oh, yeah, I had this problem, and, you know, these are the places you can go to get it fixed.
Sure. Well, okay, well, I'll do that. I just thought, you know, I was looking for a little bit quicker answer, but that's cool, too, though. I mean, at least I've, you know, I appreciate the time. And
I think there's not going to be a quicker answer. I'm sorry.
No, that's why I asked.
Yep, thanks.
Take care, guys.
Bye.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, it's an interesting problem when you find some old program. We have we had a fellow who was at RIT, and he was using a great piece of software, and the company simply went out of business. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
Nobody had taken it up. Nobody had rewritten it.
Mm-hmm.
He eventually hired a guy to pull all the data. Luckily, it was using an Access database, so getting the actual data wasn't very difficult at all.
Uh-huh.
And so he got all the data out, and then the kid that he hired to write it, he showed him all the screens, all the processes. They figured out what was going on in the background. And the kid rewrote it. It wasn't cheap. But he had the program he always wanted. He had the rights to it. And because the company was out of business, he started selling it to all the people who'd been with the other company. I mean, they were a small community. They all knew each other.
Mm-hmm.
He made a pretty decent penny off it.
Mm-hmm.
And the other company never bothered him because they'd gone out of business.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes there's opportunities out there.
Yeah. And so, you know, good for him, I guess. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Jim from Brighton, New York. Welcome, Jim. What's your question?
Hi. I know that there's ways to capture keystrokes and data stuff on computers. Is there a way to do that on a router, like if someone's using an iPad or a Kindle, to capture text being typed?
Yes. It depends.
That's always the key.
Yeah, your standard router, no. Generally speaking, they don't have enough of an actual, I guess the word would be operating system, to install software.
Okay.
However, there are two things you could do. I don't know that I should tell you about them over the air like this.
Yeah.
But if you created your own router, for example, you built a small box, a small computer box, there are Linux versions of Linux that include routers, and you could put that on there and then do anything you want. There are also sniffer programs, so it would depend on whether or not the router in question is encrypted, and I would certainly hope it would be. Otherwise, you're opening yourself up to a whole lot of trouble.
Well, so the specific issue is we have a teenager who's wandering around where he shouldn't be, and I want to capture some of the text he's sending to his friends and neighbors to see exactly what he's doing. And so if it's easy to capture the text, that'll be good, because we can certainly control his computer time, but he has a Kindle, and
right,
he's reading or texting. We can't tell the difference. That's the problem.
Right. I get that.
And so a lot of time he's being spent texting, and on a computer we can say, hey, look, you logged down here. This is what you did. You were screwing around, not doing your homework.
Right.
A book report, right? So that's a different problem on a Kindle.
Right. And so in this case, what I would suggest is for a while at least, if you were to turn off encryption on your router, you could run what's called a network sniffer on your computer. Wireshark is one. NetStumbler isn't really good. Wireshark is the one to use.
Okay.
And then you capture all the packets that are going over the system. There also used to be, and I don't even know if it still exists. There used to, because most voice phone calls over the internet things are encrypted now. But there used to be a great program called VOMIT, Voice Over Misconfigured Internet Telephones. And
well, listen, I don't need a voice problem. It's specifically, you know, like an iPad or a Kindle to make sure, you know, he's not texting his friends. He's actually doing homework, reading what he's supposed to
do.
Right. He is texting because, hey, see, you're texting your friends here and not doing your homework. This is a problem.
Right.
So.
Well, the easy way to fix that is don't let him do his homework in his room.
Yeah.
Make him come out. Make
down
him
to
out,
the kitchen.
You know, tell him.
Down the kitchen table.
Too, right? So it's kind of a tough thing to do sometimes.
I know, I get that. But you know what? Yeah. That's sometimes what it takes.
Yeah. Understood. Yeah, I'm trying to find another. That's clearly the right answer, but trying to find a different answer.
I get it. But that's the only way I would do it.
You know, he could go over to his friend's house to do his homework and use his friend's computer.
Exactly right. That's another problem. So, yeah, we're trying to... Okay, there's a lot of holes in the picture of dam. We're trying to plug a few of them, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you could remove the encryption on your router, which is dangerous.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that, probably.
But, however, you could do it from, you know, for the time the kid is supposed to be doing his homework.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay.
Just short time periods.
Right. And then keep watch on your router, and you can see who logs in. And you can knock depends on the kind of router you have, and then knock people off if you don't know them. But in general, you can also set up your router without encryption, but requires a specific MAC address to log in.
Okay.
So if for example, I could set my router up that anybody could, that it, you know, it's not encrypted, but then if Rick came over to my house, he couldn't log in because I haven't put his MAC address into the router.
Okay.
That's just another thing to do. Listen, we got to take a break.
Thanks, guys.
My pleasure. Our pleasure. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Rick Harrison, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 39 minutes after the hour, Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Rick Harrison.
And I'm clearly not paying attention. And 44 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites.
That's why you got me to control
That's
everything.
That's why I've got you there to do this. All right, our next caller is Jake from Batavia, New York. Welcome, Jake. What's your question?
Oh, great. Thanks, guys. I have a Dell desktop Vista software, and basically I was getting some data execution protection errors. I called Dell. They checked it out. They want to charge me $300. It's a malware. I use AVG paid software. I called them. They also want me to buy some additional virus package to remove the malware. And I thought you could remove malware. Just free packages.
Well, all you got to do is go to our website, and we've got two great products. It's called Malware Bytes and Super Anti-Spyware, free programs that you can download, install on your machine, and we'll get rid of that stuff.
What was that second one? Super anti-spyware.
The best thing for you to do is to go to securitytango.com.
Dance the tango.
And dance the security tango. It'll download or install a bunch of software for you. AVG is one of them. You could, if you're already paying for it, you can skip that step. But everything that I have on the site has a free version. As I say, you should, you know, always say if you can afford to, please pay for it, because that encourages them to keep building good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a pretty neat product. There's also a new one I found called Panda.
Okay.
From pandasoftware.com. And it's actually one of those over-the-air things. So there's nothing on your machine.
Oh, cool.
They update it all the time, mm-hmm. all of that stuff. They call themselves the Cloud Security Company. The home user version is free. Of course, there's a version for enterprises, but there is a free version, and it's
okay.
Active Scan, I think, is what it's called.
Just one quick question, then. Now, should I install Malware Bytes and that super spyware?
Yes.
As well?
No one program does it all, so that's why we suggest doing both.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah,
I will definitely do that.
Yeah, and I would suggest reading over the Security Tangle page.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you get there, I mean, there's a bunch of verbiage about stuff. But when you get to the page about dancing the Security Tango on your machine, on your Windows machine, print out the page, read it over carefully, and then check off each step as you go. The reason I call it a dance is because if you skip a step, you're not dancing anymore. You're just stumbling around.
Absolutely. Okay. Oh, you guys are awesome. Keep up the great work, all you guys. Thanks.
Thanks. Yeah, a Panda Active Scan 2.0 is pretty nice. One of the things that I use it for is a backup.
Mm-hmm.
So if something like what happened to Jake comes along, he's got it paid. Oh, also, Jake, make sure that your AVG is, in fact, paid for. If it's a year old, it might have stopped working.
True.
But if it is working, every once in a while, something slips through, nothing's 100%. So you try another product. Panda's Active Scan at pandasoftware.com is a known legitimate product. So you can just click on scan your PC now, scans your PC and tells you if you got a problem. So pretty nice. Pretty cool.
I got to share a story with you.
Uh-oh.
This was rather amusing. This friend of mine wanted to make sure that the computer was taken apart correctly, you know, apart totally. So, you know, no way could you ever get it back together to be itself. So this individual took out literally every possible screw and thing in this machine, proceeded to put it in separate bags, got rid of it all over the place. And then I asked the one vital question. What about the hard drive?
Yeah.
That went in its own separate bag.
Oh, no.
I says, you know, could have gotten the data back for you on that one.
Yep.
But I took all the screws out and put I started laughing.
If you want to get rid of it, you know, like put the drill through the thing several times, right?
Well, no. This individual
skeet. Use it as skeet. Trust me when I tell you, you aren't going to put that back together again.
Well, like I say, I have
if
fun.
You're a good shot.
Well, I have fun with it with my, you know, 20-pound sledgehammer.
Yep.
I turn them into maracas. And they no data is coming off of those.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just thought it very humorous. And the individual goes, well, I guess if I had consulted with this guy that I know works on computers, I go, well, that would have been a good idea. I could have helped you.
Yeah, one phone call early is better than six phone calls late.
But they figured, you know, and it was good thinking, you know, to take it totally apart and put all the parts in different. I just found it very humorous because, and I explained it, you know, I wasn't laughing at him. I was laughing with him because we do get individuals, and I have over the course of the years, folks, you know, do some unique stuff like, oh, well, the computer's still on, try pulling the video card out and reseating that and then wonder why all of a sudden now the machine won't boot.
Yep.
Or checking memory to see if that's reseated. You know, seated correctly, they'll pull a stick out and put that back in and then wonder why, oh, that's no longer working. To just the very simple ones that I can.
No, that's me. Somebody's
that's the TARDIS.
Or to, you know, take, and this is going back a number of years, how a lot of folks turn the, you know, the buttons off on the side for the power, the old original PCs. And I worked on this one guy's, and he was used to one of those control panels. Remember the control panels?
Oh, sure.
He had the monitor on top. And he was hitting that on. Called me up. No, you didn't fix this thing. It's still damn broken. You know, I need you to come out and look at it. I said, now, did you turn the button on inside? Yeah, everything's set. No problem. So I go out there, go into the house. All his lights are lit on the control panel. Nothing, you know, the screen's there. It was an old monochrome screen.
Sure.
Green with black. And I look alongside the PC. Hit the red button.
Yep.
All of a sudden, it started booting up.
What'd you do?
Turned it on, like I asked you to.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and by the way, there's a fee for that.
I said, have a nice day.
It's a really old story there, Dave.
I before we get any farther, I want to remind people that today is Pretend to be a Time Traveler Day.
Huh? Cool.
Or, as I read it the first time, Pretend to be a Time Lord Day.
Oh, that's even better.
So that's even better.
What's that all about?
Pretend to be a time traveler.
Hey, I'm lucky just if I had time, and I'm just glad I'm up.
Like hell time with travel.
Hell with traveling. Just getting up in the morning is a good thing. Moving. Heck with going time traveling.
That's exactly right. I'm sorry. I just didn't want to forget that again.
Well, that's a good thing to remind everyone of.
That's exactly right. Or perhaps probably I've already reminded
it's too
everybody.
Late. Anybody that suffers from CRS, they already missed them.
Right. Oh, hey, before I forget, today...
CRS.
What, did I say that already? I just popped in from the future, from the past, so I didn't remember.
I was going to say, I think Dave's from the past, isn't he?
Yes.
Way past. Past my time. Oh...
So last night, I actually, my daughter was talking about it. My daughter and I, she's a big Doctor Who fan as well. I raised her right.
Well, that's good.
And we actually found a site that let us, that teaches you how to write in Gallifreyan.
Ooh.
Circular Gallifreyan.
Huh?
Send me that link.
It's the language of the Time Lords. And I wrote my name and her name in Gallifreyan.
So that is so far over my head.
Yeah, yeah.
I just don't...
If you're not a Doctor Who fan, you don't get that.
Yeah, you wouldn't get it.
No.
But you got it, and you're thrilled now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
See, I'm not... Matter of fact, you know, I hate to admit it, but I've gotten to where if I have TV on, it's background noise. And since I've gotten my Nexus...
Yep.
I do a lot more reading.
Oh, yeah, I read a lot.
I've actually cut down a lot on my TV time. And again, this is getting lazy... But I prefer watching, you know, if I'm going to watch anything on TV, I've got the on demand.
Yep.
I'll go watch that because then I can get caught up on some programs that I really do like NCIS and NCISL, let's say as two of them. And I can watch those on demand without a lot of the long commercials. I mean, you see 1 hour shows all of a sudden go to 40 minutes.
Yeah, right.
Now that's my kind of viewing because within an hour, say hour and a half, I can cram in two programs I've caught up and then I go back to my reading.
I'm with you. I do the same thing, but one of those shows that I watch is Doctor Who.
I just never got into that.
Yeah. Oh, man, I've been watching it since the 70s.
You started before I did. I didn't get into it till the 80s.
Great show.
Yeah.
They have sound on them, those
guys? They had sound, but what happened was a guy would come to your house with a flip book.
Oh, okay.
And
illustrations.
Do the voices himself.
Oh, good. Like I was telling you before, a great movie. Folks haven't seen it right now. It's Lincoln.
You know, I watched an entire movie. I didn't see one zombie.
Yeah, I know. Steve, why didn't you come back?
You're right. No, it was, Spielberg. I mean, look at the cast he put together.
Oh. That guy...
Not a clinker in the bunch.
And it was phenomenal. The settings and everything else, that movie was so well done.
Yeah, the cinematography. And
well, again, that's some of the other stuff I love to read. You know, I love to read about history and that type of stuff. And Lincoln, now there was one heck of a man. For a farm boy, you know, he was just so well read. And he was always, you know, very... lay back in that he would sit there and think about things.
Yep.
Somebody would present something to him, and he'd actually sit there, you know, and not quick blurt something out, but he'd think about it, and he'd draw on some of his other experiences. And folks, because one part in the movie, without giving anything away, which it's not, they're in one scene, and somebody throws a comment at him, he starts to think, and all of a sudden he starts going into one of his stories, and the guy goes, if you're going into a story, I'm getting out of here. And the guy leaves. The rest of the crowd is just sitting around, you know, in the room that he's in, and just mesmerized.
Yep.
Because this guy, the stuff that he can equate and, you know, put substance around, you know, it is unbelievable.
And talking about things like texting, we lose that rich oral history. We lose... Well, everything's got to happen fast now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nobody's going to sit through a Shaggy Dog story anymore. And that's kind of sad in its own little way. It really is kind of sad. But, it's a great film. Spielberg, Daniel Day-Lewis, wow.
And this is not to be confused with Lincoln, Vampire Killer.
Right, Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter.
Yeah, no, this...
Because there were no vampires in this movie. I was very confused. Sally Field was excellent.
Oh, she was. She played a
everybody.
Mm-hmm. Wait, did you saw it?
No. I've seen the trailers and the behind the scenes and the clips and the thing. My wife and I haven't had time together to go see it, and we want to. So
yeah, no, that's one. But, put on your Christmas list. Another one that's coming up again. I guess it's plugs for the holidays is Les Mis.
Yeah.
That looks
really I think while I really want to see every single one of those actors in that role, I'm a little Les Mis'd out. I have seen it enough for a while.
Well, I've seen it on Broadway.
Yeah, exactly. I've seen it enough for a while.
Up in Toronto.
I'm sure I'll go. But right now my thought is I'm a little Les Mis'd out to sit through all of that music. All of that emotion again.
Well, which I'm kind of segueing into some of the Christmas gifts that folks are going to be looking for, and that's with these new tablets right now that you can, get the movies in that and download them and watch them at your convenience. And the clarity on some of these tablets is unbelievable.
Yep. I see iTunes gift cards in my future.
Yep.
Exactly. Well, that's for my grandkids. You know, they're big into the music and all that, except my grandson. He just has his own thing, so I just give him money because
I have my own thing. You can give me money.
He's into soccer and the basketball.
I'm making it easy for him.
I'll get you what you got me last year.
Oh, I've always wanted another one of those.
What was you it, too? Nothing?
Nothing, exactly nothing.
Hey, it's a gift that keeps on giving.
Exactly. He just gave me nothing just now, again.
And you
aren't you lucky?
You don't have to worry about it. And I save him the hassles of going to the store and returning it. No hassles. No worries. No stress.
It's exactly
I avoid
right.
it all.
It's the right color. It's the right. It's not the wrong color. It's not the wrong size.
Exactly.
And it never has to be fixed.
You
or
got
washed.
It. Never breaks.
It's wonderful. It's the perfect gift.
And it just keeps on giving.
You're welcome, America. And 37 foreign countries.
But no, I mean, some of the stuff out there right now, and maybe, we're coming up on top of the hour. Maybe we can start getting some of the folks to call in with their ideas if they give us a buzz at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. We'll get you on the air. We'd love to hear some of maybe your ideas for some great gifts.
Your significant other may be listening. But we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Rick Harrison, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. We're Soundbites, a member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Rick Harrison.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And remember, call in and let us know what you would love to have for Christmas or whatever holiday you get gifts on, because it is possible your significant other or insignificant other is listening.
Mm-hmm.
What about you? What's on your list?
Well, what's on my list? I haven't even started my list much, although I am looking at these Apple trackpads. Because Mountain Lion likes to use gestures, and
yep.
I think I need to start using that more instead of using the mouse.
Did you hear that the government invalidated Apple's multi-touch patent?
I think I did hear that.
Yeah, they also invalidated the one on rubber banding. They also invalidated the one on I think they invalidated, or no, that's in the courts now, the one on rounded rectangles.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. All of the really stupid patents that we've all laughed at, I don't care if you're a Mac person or not, that we've all laughed at that Apple took out, they're slowly being taken away.
Yeah, the rounded rectangle thing. I was in a donut place the other day and noticed that the pattern on the table was rounded rectangles.
Yeah, right.
It was back from the 60s.
Right. Right. So yeah, we. So that's being taken away. But so the trackpad is really all you've gone to so far.
Yeah, that's one thing. I took a look also at this new thermostat thing. I'm trying to learn more about it. Trying to remember the name of the damn thing.
Thermostat?
Yeah, it's a thermostat that you just go and you set it for what you want, you know, whether you're going to sleep or whether you're leaving or what. And
programmable.
It kind of learns from what you do. You mm-hmm. don't have to program it.
Well,
and then you can also
nice.
Control it from your iPod or your iPad.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sort of like a home control type.
Yeah, and it works over Wi-Fi.
Oh, that's one thing.
But it's expensive. It's like $250 or something.
Yeah, right. The problem is I don't want cheap toys for Christmas. I never want cheap toys. It's the problem.
Since we got a Mac guy here, I got a Mac question. Trying to hook up a friend has a router. She got the Apple Airport.
Okay, the Airport or Airport Express?
Airport Express.
Okay.
Little white thing.
Yeah.
All right. Now she went out and got one of those Kodak ESP printers. We set it up for networking. She's only has an iPad to work with.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to get it to print to that. That should be just the Kodak app to put on it, correct? Put that on it. Should
if
discover.
I really don't use Kodak products, so I can't help you with
it. Theoretically, it should just if it can print at all, it should be able to find that printer over the internet.
Well, see, that's what I've been having issues trying because I'm unfamiliar with the Mac. You know, having it try to find.
Well, if you bring your thing over, can you set yours up to talk to it?
I don't know. Yeah, well, yeah, I could probably because it's a DOS-based, you know, but...
Well, what are you plugging the printer into? Into the Airport Express?
No, nothing. It's just wireless.
Oh, it's a wireless printer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So in the printing thing, shouldn't you be able to say, I've got a wireless printer and here's the IP address?
Yeah, that would be the way to go if it's set up.
Yeah, I've got it set up so, you know, it's doing wireless. It found the Apple Airport Express.
An IP address.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you should be able to put that IP address when you go to set up the printing
in
on the iPad.
See, that's where I don't know where to set it up in an iPad. I've never set up.
Oh,
isn't there an AirPrint app or something out there?
Well, but shouldn't you be able? Doesn't it happen right under settings somewhere? Or do you actually have to have a separate app to do that?
I think there may have been a separate app. I mean, this is really more of a Steve question than.
Yeah, it really
I've
is.
Never done what you're talking about.
Yeah, I was just trying to figure it out because, again, I haven't played with it. You know, my tablet, it's DOS-based. It just found my wireless network and said, oh, okay, put in the username and password.
What tablet do you have that's DOS-based?
Oh, not DOS-based.
Linux-based.
Linux-based, thank you. DOS-based.
He's that's, really going out.
Yeah, I'm going really old school. So you guys have aged me so bad, I'm going reverse.
Clearly we
no,
have.
I had another gentleman stop by. Pick up his computer, and we were talking about the old DOS days and what he still had and what I first used, so that's where my mind was there on that one. But, trying to get, you know, my Nexus tablet, it just found the printers and
yep.
away it went. It didn't have to do anything, just like it found all my settings and the programs, and it just happened. Doing it on an iPad, and that's their only computer.
Yeah, right, I don't know.
It's been a little challenge. Well,
I will say I never print anything anymore except for this. Which we never use anyway, but
maybe you should do another story.
No, we got a caller coming up in just a minute, but printing is getting to be a lost art. You know, most people don't print stuff anymore.
Well, they're starting to print in 3D now too.
I love that. I want
that's
a 3D printer.
Everything.
That's what I want for Christmas. I want a MakerBot.
Exactly, I'll take a MakerBot too.
That's exactly
that
what I want
list.
For Christmas. I'll tell you that right now. Anybody out there, I want two things for Christmas. I want a MakerBot and Google Fiber. Both of those would be wonderful if someone would like to slide those my way. I'd be a happy little man.
MakerBot?
We'll talk about that after this call. We have Vic from Irondequoit on the line. Hi, Vic. What's up?
Email question. I use Outlook for my Hotmail, and I use IncrediMail. And a lot of my email goes to an Outlook goes to junk. And then when I click on it, I look, and I separate real junk from not junk. And yet every day it looks like the same ones that I say that they aren't junk go right back into the junk folder. Is there any reason for that?
Yeah, if you're getting your Outlook mail through Hotmail,
yeah,
you have you're teaching Outlook not what to do, but you're not teaching Hotmail. Hotmail is separate, so you have to do that through the web interface.
I don't follow you.
Okay, Hotmail is Microsoft's mail system.
Right.
And it was originally a mail-only, a web-based system. So you should be able to log into Hotmail.com and see your mail there as well through the web browser.
Oh, okay. That's where Outlook.
Yeah, but I have found that Outlook doesn't correctly teach Hotmail about these things. I don't know why. If everything is coming into the inbox, Outlook can handle it. But if it's actually being filtered first at Hotmail, Outlook doesn't refilter it.
I just tried to log into Hotmail.com and it took me right to Outlook.
Yeah, but you're on the web now. And what you want to do is go in and see what rules are already set and remove them so that instead of things be see what's happening now is before Outlook ever gets them, Hotmail is applying rules. So things are already in your trash before they get to Outlook. Outlook's not going to take them out of the trash.
I get that part. Okay.
So you need to go into Hotlook or Outmail and you're going to need to go to Hotmail. Wow. And I need to take a little lie down now. You need to go into Hotmail itself and remove all the filters that are there so that next time mail comes in, it only ever comes into the inbox. Then when it's sent to Outlook, Outlook's rules will handle it.
No, I still can't get into Hotmail. Again, I tried to log on to Hotmail, and it kicked me right to Outlook.
Online version of Outlook.
Well, how else do I get? I don't know.
Oh, I thought you were using Outlook on your computer.
No. It'll be online.
That's a good question then. And that's interesting. And you've looked at all the rules that are in there, and you don't see any that you didn't set.
How do I get to the rules? No, that's what I'm trying to get at. How do I get to those rules?
Oh, all right. From Outlook. Right.
Hotmail's Outlook is what I mean. Because Microsoft or Hotmail switched over to Outlook, I don't know, a few months ago.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
So that's where I am in right now.
And this is the online?
Yes.
Version? I can't log in from here, but hold on a minute. There should be a tools menu. And under the tools menu should be rules and alerts. But I can't log in from here.
Messaging, I got my name. Categories, nope. All I have in the top is new, delete, archive, junk, sweep, move, categories.
Yeah. The rules are, you can right-click on a message and say create rule from there.
Oh, okay. Let's see what happens. Reply for... I don't see that. I just right-clicked on it and it says...
That's the way I do it. I don't know what you're looking at.
I'm looking at one of my emails.
I understand that.
Then it says for this message. And then it goes mark as read, delete, archive, junk.
Oh, you're using the free version. Right?
What's that? I'm using the free version, yeah.
Yeah. Wow. All right, try... Oh, dear. The free version. That's... Hold on. Oh, man, the rules... I don't off the top of my head know. You can forward... No, that's not going to do it. I'm sorry. I don't off the top of my head know. I know how to do it to forward. But you should be able to go into You should be able to do it. You right-click a message, and there should be a create rule.
Yeah, I don't see that.
No, yeah, and don't open. If you've opened the message, you can select create rule from the toolbar. But if the message is closed, you should be able to just simply right-click on it. Although, no, that works not on the web version. Yeah, it should. It should.
You say open up the email?
Yeah. Okay. No, don't open up the email.
Don't? Okay. I didn't, and I right-clicked on the...
And there's no new rule?
It says, for this message, reply. Everything that's in the top toolbar is on the right-click now. View message source, move, junk, archive, delete, mark as unread, forward, reply all, reply. And the bottom it says, for this sender.
Click there.
Click there. And I get the send email, find email, move all from, delete all from, schedule cleanup.
I'm sorry, I'll have to go look. I can't get there from here. It's blocked. So, but I will look. I can't give it to you off the top of my head. I remember doing right click and new rule.
Okay.
But if you open the message, you should have in one of the it was same thing. It should be in one of the.
Mm-hmm.
There should be a tools menu that lets you do that. But I'll have to look. I'll have to look at home. And I'm sorry.
Okay, no problem. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I feel bad. I just don't. I don't have the answer in my head for that one.
Tough questions today.
No, that's good. We like tough questions. Yeah. I just don't know.
It makes us do more research.
Yeah, I just don't know. Outlook is not a product I use every day, and what I'm seeing in my head is clearly they must have made some changes the last time I actually
they
used
probably
it.
Have.
I use Outlook at work, but that's the Outlook program going to an Exchange server, and that's different, and I know that. I'm sorry, Vic. Our next caller is Pat from Greece, New York. Welcome, Pat. What's your question?
Actually, I was going to help you on the online for the Outlook and then that.
Perfect. Please.
For Outlook, for using Outlook.com, you actually have to go to where the contact is on top. You have to go and search for the contact and add it as a search field, and then you add it as a.
Oh, so you actually create rules based on certain contacts as opposed to certain emails.
Yeah, you also can do it that way, too, for whatever, from, inbox, whatever.
Right, right, right. Perfect.
Cool.
Thanks, Pat.
Yeah, thank you.
And then the thing with the AirPrint, you can also just hook the, if it's the old, if it's the new one, ultimately you should be able to. In order to AirPrint, you have to go into whatever your app you're using and see if the printer is able to recognize the AirPrint feature.
Okay.
So
I'll just have to open up, I'll open up the web browser on the iPad and see if a printer is there.
Through that?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Where you hit the share button, little arrow,
mm-hmm.
and check the AirPrint there if it doesn't register.
Okay.
And Kodak printers may. Some may be AirPrint mm-hmm. compatible,
mm-hmm.
some may not.
Okay, cool.
Perfect. Thanks, Pat.
I actually found something on Google that was talking about the Kodak printers and whether or not they were AirPrint compatible or not. It's best to check the list at Apple to see whether or not your printer is compatible.
Right. I will say this. I think Kodak has made some excellent products over the years. The problem always is setting them up. A lot of them want to be attached for setup to a PC. So if your person doesn't have PCs, you're kind of screwed.
Yeah. Driver issues all the time.
Yep, and driver issues everywhere.
Yeah, and that's because, the operating systems are getting upgraded so quickly, and the poor, guys writing the printer drivers, they can't keep up.
That's why you want the UPnPs, the Universal Plug and Play.
Yeah.
You set up a printer that says, hello, I'm here on the Internet. And you say, well, I want to connect to you, and it says, what's the password, which you've set up on the printer itself, and you're in. You're done. There isn't a lot of question, comment,
that's right.
Screwball around, nothing. Just send me raw print, and I'll figure out how to format it.
Yeah, on a printer, if you find yourself having to call tech support, you probably bought the wrong printer there.
Yeah, well, all right, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Sound Bites. Member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Rick Harrison.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we have Mark from Penfield on the line. Welcome, Mark. What's your question?
Hi, guys. I want to thank you for the podcast, by the way. It definitely is very helpful to not listen to you on long flights. So thank you for doing that.
No, thank you.
Also, going back to you had somebody that mentioned a son or somebody trying to get on the Internet not doing homework. Would OpenDNS not work for him? Can you block?
He could block stuff, but yes, you could do that. Yes, you could do that. Is instead of this was Jim from Brighton. Instead of checking what the kid is doing, actually
don't let him go.
Block
places.
Where he can go. Yeah. Like for example, here at Greece, they've got a system set up so that I cannot, in fact, get to Facebook here on their wireless network or even their wired network on purpose. I'm sure they've done that on purpose so students can't go there. You could do the same with the right software at your end. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah, I do
that. That's a good thought.
With my boys as well, and that's it's pretty helpful.
And you're using OpenDNS for that.
Network attached storage.
Well, wait, before we go there, hold on. Let me get this straight. You're using OpenDNS for that.
Yeah, so I use OpenDNS to help filter the content for what they can view, but I actually haven't used it for I can't remember if they had an option for you to, not have instant messaging. I can't remember.
Right. I know they have web content filtering. I just haven't played with it enough to know that what it will do.
That's okay. I was asking. I wasn't sure. I'm not looking at the moment, but it does do web content filtering very well.
Yeah. I'm sure it probably will. There are some pre-configured ones. So at any rate, yeah, it's a good thing to think. Sorry, I interrupted you. Go ahead. What's your question?
Yeah, you guys have any recommendations on network attached storage devices? I've used one for the first time a few weeks back in a work situation, and I'm looking to buy one terabyte drive, two terabyte drives in one. You guys have any things to look for, suggestions, recommendations?
I prefer network to stuff that is attached directly to the network, as opposed to USB connection to the computer or anything else. Mm-hmm. Because what's nice about that is everybody on the network sees it, and so everybody can have their own little storage area. You can set up batch files or rsync or whatever you want to do to save everything to it. Buffalo makes a really good one. That's the one I happen to have in my house right now, so that name is in my head. But there are half a dozen companies that make good network attached storage devices.
What I used before was Buffalo, the Terra. Buffalo made it and it worked really well. I didn't know if you had good or bad experience with it.
That's the one I've got, and it works every single day.
Okay, great.
The other one I had before that was real nice, but eventually it died, although that may have been my exuberant dog trying to get up in my lap while I was in the process of moving it and ripped things out of it, and it never worked after that very well, and then just simply died. At any rate, and the important thing to remember about network-attached storage is it's still in your home. So if there is a flood or a fire, God forbid, any disaster like that, you lose the backup as well. It's not an off-site backup.
Like a backup folder to a secondary drive. Can you set up can you make like an automatic cloud storage off of the NAS?
Off of the NAS? I don't.
Yeah.
That's a good question. I would do it directly off the computer. For example, you can use things like Google Drive. There are programs that will let you save data right to your Google Drive. Now, that's only 5 gig for free.
I have a lot of users in my house, so if I have my kids and my wife, they don't remember to do it on their end. But if I can set up a folder to automatically back, they have a main folder and a backup folder. Can I set up the backup folder to just upload to the cloud automatically?
Yes, Yes, through your computer, not directly without your computer being involved.
Oh, okay.
But if, for example, you use something along the lines of Carbonite and paid the $60 a year for Carbonite, it doesn't care what folder you connect it to. So you could say, I want you to back up through my computer, back up the NAS folder to Carbonite.
Okay, excellent.
Right? That means your computer is important to the process, but so what? You know, it's the secondary backup. So if your computer dies, everybody else can still get at their stuff. Your data are still saved. You just don't do the secondary backup until you get your computer up and running again.
Gotcha.
Does that make sense?
Good.
All right.
Yeah, thank you very much, guys. Great show. I appreciate your work.
Thanks, Mark.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I back up to a server over the internet myself.
Mm-hmm. Use a cloud based thing.
Yeah, I use a cloud based thing. I have my own server out on the net, and mm-hmm. so I rsync everything mm-hmm. From my machine to there, and from my wife's machine to mm-hmm. my machine, and then from my machine to there.
Yeah, one of the things we're going to talk about in Apple Cider this month is MediaFire, which is one of these online places. They give you 50 gigabytes for free.
Can't argue with that. Can't argue with that. I just bought a Chromebook, the ARM version, the $249 one. Mm-hmm. Holy moly, I'm in love. And it comes with 100 gig free on Google Drive.
Nice.
So for 2 years, free for 2 years.
Thereafter, nobody knows what will happen.
Well, you can pay for it, and I think it's I don't remember what it costs. But I'm loving my Google Drive. Holy cow, I love that thing.
Oh, good.
It's fast, it's easy, it's cheap, it's nice.
And it works.
I really like it. I have Paul from Canandaigua on the line. Welcome, Paul. What's your question?
Another email question.
Yeah.
I've got about 15 years' worth of AOL emails. These seem to be only openable through AOL. Is there any way to convert emails to some generic format that can be opened by a word processor, so I don't have to rely on always having AOL on my computer? And is this the same for every email program? Is it sort of proprietary? And
most of them are in fact proprietary in some way. But if you're using AOL and you have direct email. Is it in what they used to call a PFC, a private filing cabinet?
Yes.
Okay. Do you have the newer AOL version?
Yes.
Are you using the online version only, or do you have the program on your PC?
Program on the PC.
All right. So it would be under Documents and Settings.
Right.
All Users. Application Data. AOL. C_America Online and whatever your version number, probably 9.0C at this point, I think it is, organize. So those are the folder levels. And for every screen name, the emails are stored in a file called your screen name with no extension. And so you can immediately back that up somewhere. That's step one.
Right. Yep.
All right. There is also a program called AOL Dump, and you can find that online.
Okay.
There's an EXE file and a DLL file. Put them in an empty folder. Copy that backup PFC file you created.
Yep.
Into the same folder where you put AOL dump. Add the extension .pfc to that file you just moved.
Okay.
And then run it. It's in German. So if you don't speak German, you want Datei, which is D-A-T-E-I. That means file. I'm probably pronouncing that badly.
Okay. George will straighten us out.
Right. It's Datei. Arrow PFC converterin, which you can obviously means PFC convert.
Okay.
And it'll show all a list of all the files with the PFC extension. Click open. And then you can save it as an MBX, which is a mailbox, which is a standard email, which you could then import into something like Mozilla or Thunderbird or whatever.
Oh, okay.
So that's one way to do it.
All righty. Well, we'll see. Give that a try.
There's also another way to do it, which is if you're running something along the lines of AOL of Thunderbird.
Right.
You can actually connect it, configure it for your AOL email, and it all comes there. Oh. And then you can do an export right through Thunderbird or just keep using it in Thunderbird.
Oh, okay. Okay, that sounds...
Probably better, huh?
Yeah. Okay. All right, very good. And this is the sort of the case with most things, or is just AOL is really, really proprietary?
They're all proprietary.
Okay.
Most of them provide some form of give me my data. Well, few of them actually provide some form of give me my data or export my data into a usable format.
Okay. Well, very good. Time for another question?
Yeah, go for it.
I was in my, what the hell do you call it? Your computer. What directories are on your computer? And
right.
I hit my documents. This is a Windows 7.
Right.
And it hit documents, and you get my documents. If I click on, and this is in the library section, if I click on documents, the word documents, rather than the little arrow before it.
Right.
I get 460,000 files that seem to be little pieces of eBay auctions that I save. The little logos and every little thing. There's 465,000 of them.
Sure.
If I click on the arrow, I get the directory of what's in my documents.
Right.
Does this seem normal, or do I delete those, or will I lose stuff in...
No, you can delete any one of them you want. If they're those eBay, if you know they're the eBay things, if you don't know what it is, don't delete it.
Right.
But if you know what it is, go ahead and delete it. It's just little bits and pieces that are saved on your computer. It's essentially a cache.
That's
of what comes up
internet,
on your web browser, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, but I won't lose anything in the saved auctions that I, those.
Well, I don't know because I'm not in front of your computer.
Okay.
You know, but if it's not causing your machine to run really slowly or anything else, ignore them.
No, it's machine's fine.
Yeah, just ignore them.
You can always get rid of the old ones.
It took a whole while to load, and then there's these obnoxious file names, and when I... got images of them because a lot of them were...
Look, don't ever start looking around your computer. You will find hundreds of thousands of files that you have no idea what they are and what they're for.
You will be tempted
at some point to do, I don't need that. Oh, yeah, you do because it's your operating system. So don't play around. Don't muck about.
Well, one thing he could do, though, is he could go into any of those if he wants to clean that up a little bit, since there are... such an enormous amount of files there.
Right. There are lots of
go through some of them that maybe are over 2 years old or a year old.
Sure, sort them by date.
Yeah, sort them by date and just get rid of the oldest ones that you know are...
But make sure what you're deleting is you know what it is.
Yeah.
Okay, very good. All right, thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Yeah, there's... people do it all the time. They will jump in and say, oh, I don't know what this is.
Let me delete it.
Yeah.
And then they're in trouble. My computer doesn't work.
Right. And then they call up and say, and I always say, well, what did you do different? Nothing. Did you delete something? No. Then how come your whole Windows directory is missing? Maybe I
did.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I did last week.
Yeah. Yeah. So, if you don't know, don't touch. It's that simple. Do we have time for this call before the break?
We can get him on, get his question, and then if we have to take a break, we can put him on hold.
All righty. Our next caller is Jason from Altoona, PA. Welcome, Jason. We'll at least get your question in here.
All right. You can actually answer it after I hang up. I'm actually considering either an Android tablet or the Chromebook is kind of looking interesting to me. What are the differences? And if I do go the Chromebook route, does that still have access to the... Google Play Store? Can I get apps and things like that? Or is that something that's only available for Android? My big thing is I'm still running a Windows-based laptop, I like the features of Android, but what I miss is a physical keyboard so that when I get the creative urge to write a story or a chapter in one of my stories, I have something I can pound on to pound the words out.
Yep. Yep. All right. Let's start. In any case at all, whether it's Android, Apple, any, I don't care. To me, tablets are consumer devices, and you need something with a real keyboard if you're going to be a creator.
Right.
Which is one of the reasons I bought the Chromebook. There are, are you using the Chrome browser?
Me?
Yeah.
No, actually, I run Firefox.
You should download the Chrome browser and take a look at it, because if you go to an empty tab, you should see the Chrome store.
Yeah, come to think of it, that's the first place I ever played Angry Birds.
Exactly, and you can download a bunch of stuff through there, and in fact, more of it every day, because Chromebooks are out. And those are essentially the apps for the Chromebook. I'll talk more about this when we come back from a break. Why don't you stay on the line, because I may have a couple more questions for you. So we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Rick Harrison, me, Nick Francesco, and you. And Jason from Altoona, PA. It is 39 minutes after the hour. We're Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Go ahead, Nick.
Sure. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Rick Harrison.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, Jason from Altoona, PA is still on the line. You know, you can do any one of these tablets with a Bluetooth keyboard, but most of them I don't find as useful for long-term work. For some reason, they're just not sturdy enough. I don't know, whatever it is. Whatever it is, I don't personally use them. But I just got a Chromebook, and I can do all the stuff I like to do, play lots of games and do lots of other apps. And when I want to write, I can just sit there and write. And if I go to somewhere where there's no wireless, because Chromebooks are really just web browsers and they just live on the web. But if I'm going somewhere where I know there's no wireless, I can work offline. I can either write new documents offline, or I can download a document to the Chromebook and write it more offline. And then the next time I get online, it automatically goes back up and everything is happy again. Are you still there, Jason?
Yes, I'm
okay. Okay. So for as a writer, I prefer the Chromebook to a tablet. As a consumer, when I just want to sit and watch Hulu or YouTube or whatever, Crackle all day long, wouldn't that be nice? I tend to grab a tablet. But when I'm actually working, when I want to write something, even when I just want to sit on Chrome, on Google Plus and chat with people, I prefer to do it over an actual keyboard. Now, if I'm doing a Hangout where it's all audiovisual stuff, where, you know, it's Hangout is like Skype, only with up to 10 people at a time, I might grab my tablet. Although, again, doing that on the Chromebook means that I don't have to hold this thing at any particular angle while I'm working. So there's a lot of pros and cons, but I'll tell you what, if the Android tablet that I have, the Nexus 7, ridiculously convenient, a great ebook reader, terrific for the daily little tasks that you do. Chromebook, writing. Absolutely, absolutely. When I'm writing, I go to the Chromebook. Oh, and by the way, the Chromebook and the Nexus 7 weigh about the same. So I can throw them both in a bag, you know, throw it over my shoulder, I don't even notice the extra weight.
How much memory is in the Chromebook?
16 gig, but it doesn't matter because it's mostly web-based.
Online. Yeah.
So, and I, you know what? I almost never am somewhere where I can't get a network connection.
Oh, yeah. That's what I said. You know, I use very little of my data plan because there's so many places where I can tap into wireless.
Right.
Why waste it?
Here, for example, I really could do wireless, but I can also buy the extra dongle and connect directly into mm-hmm. Ethernet. So I may end up doing that and replace my
Lenovo?
Replace the Lenovo with that just to try it for a bit. Just to try it for a bit. It has been the trusty companion for a long time.
Yes, it has.
I guess that's it. When I'm creating, I want the Chromebook. When I'm consuming, I want my tablet.
So pretty much you're saying that I'm not going to find one or the other that's going to be the best option. I pretty much need both if I want to do that.
No, you
could.
Well,
it depends what you do.
Right.
That's all.
Yeah.
For instance, I use my iPad when I'm out and about, and I'll do things like surf the web with it, or maybe I'll write it a letter or an email. It's fine for that.
Yep.
But when I want to do really serious work, maybe I want to use several applications at once, then I want to be using, you know, my MacBook or my MacBook Pro.
Yep. You know, I do the same thing. When I'm out and about, if I want to kick off a quick email or whatever, answer some stuff on Google Plus or on Facebook or whatever, I can do that on my Nexus 7 with no trouble. But when I sit down to do serious writing, it just fatigues you after a while. And I personally find that every Bluetooth keyboard, every single one of them, has disadvantages.
I have found one keyboard that I like a lot, and it's the Zag keyboard. And I had tried, I think, a Kensington before that. But the Kensington was great, except it had a terrible switch on it. And after a while, the switch top stopped working to turn it on and off. So then I went to the Zag, and I've been happy ever since.
I have a Zag. I like it a lot. The keys are a little closer together than they are on the Chromebook.
Uh-huh.
And as a touch typist, I have a little bit of trouble with that.
Well, that's why I use my laptop.
Right, exactly. That's exactly it.
Yeah, that was why I chose the Asus laptop I got, because it has a full-size keyboard.
Yep.
It even has the number pad on the side.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
There you go. The one, obviously the Chromebook does not have the number pad.
Yeah.
I
guess I was kind of hoping that somewhere out there there'd be somebody who realized that there were people like me who would combine a full-fledged laptop with an onboard Android system, so that when all I wanted to do was go online and look up something on Wikipedia, I could boot into Android and be up and running in 2.5 seconds. And when I wanted to do a Word document, I could boot into Windows and do that.
Well, there is the Asus Transformer. It's a clamshell laptop, full keyboard screen, but you can pop off the screen and it's an Android tablet. But it's always Android, though. It is not two different operating systems. However, when it is a tablet, if you pop open Chrome, you can do all the Chromebook stuff, right? Because you're just in Chrome and you're on Google Docs or whatever. So that's a hybrid that kind of works. The other nice thing I like about it is that on the Transformer, the Asus Transformer, there is a 9-hour battery in the tablet and another 9-hour battery in the keyboard that recharges the one in the tablet.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. So you can run 18 out. Well, 18, you know,
that's great for a long trip.
17 or 16 hours when you're really done. Yeah.
Yeah, especially when you're on your airplane and flying between, you know, New York and San Francisco.
Exactly. You're watching movies. It's probably 14 hours or 13 hours, but you know what I mean. So there are compromises. But I will say this, one writer to another: try the keyboard before you buy it.
Yeah.
Go to somewhere that sells them and really don't just tickle the keys. Actually try it. Try writing a short document and see how you feel about that keyboard. You'll know pretty quick whether or not that's something you can use on a daily basis.
Yeah, the only keyboard I've found that I really like for my desktop, I have to go all the way back to the PS2 architecture.
Right. The other thing, of course, is the new Microsoft tablets. I'm not a fan of their capacitive touch thing. It's after a long while, and for me that long while is like half an hour, I get fatigued because there isn't the right kind of give to the keys.
Okay.
You tend to pound on the keys harder. It's like typing on the desk. On the actual surface of your desk.
Yeah, you're typing too hard.
You tend to type harder, and it's, for me, it's fatiguing. Again, you need to try it before you can decide. But I had fatigue problems with that personally.
Especially if you have arthritis, that would really bother.
Well, that's exactly what I got. All right.
All right. Well, you've given me a lot to think about, so I will. Take it all under advisement, and someday I'll let you know what I choose.
Please let us know.
What I would like to tell you is that last year I called just about this time and asked a question about the Samsung Galaxy Media Players.
Uh-huh.
And I've had it for a year, and I didn't think I'd end up using it as much as I did and have.
Yep.
And it's kind of why I'm looking at this process now, is because I've really grown to enjoy the features from Android. And like I said, I wish somebody would come up with the idea of a way where when I want the features from Android, I real quick got them in one device. But when I want the features for a full-blown laptop, I've got those features right there in the same device at the same time.
Right. And the Chromebook is kind of close. The problem with the Chromebook is it's not phone-sized. You know, so when I want to quickly look at the weather or whatever, I just pull out my phone, open it up, and there's the weather.
Right. You know, my wife actually has an Android-based phone, and I like it, but my concern is that I hate the old problem of putting all your eggs in one basket. If I lose my phone, there goes my MP3 player, there goes my portable computer, and who knows what else I've got stored on. You know?
I completely agree. That's why I believe in using multiple devices for multiple things. I have a phone. I have my old phone, which I call my iPod. I put it into airplane mode, so it's essentially like iPhones. An iPod is essentially an iPhone without a phone. My old phone doesn't have a phone in it anymore, so it's essentially my iPod. And I have the Chromebook for when I'm actually looking to write and do bigger, longer things. Yeah, and carrying the three of them around, I've got a messenger bag thing that I carry, and the weight is non-existent for those extra devices.
Yeah. Do you have time for me to comment on one of your previous callers?
Very, very quickly.
Okay, well, just a thought. If the gentleman looking for the network-attached storage has any problems with just getting a single device, the other option would be to go and take an old computer, install a minimal version of Linux on it, throw in some extra hard drives. Now he's got a network system that could be programmed that you could back up all your computers on your home network to that one computer, and then it could handle uploading to whatever cloud device or service you want.
Excellent idea. All right, thanks, Jason. We are done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright. I specifically want to thank Rick Harrison for stepping in as Steve is off one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Midwest. Thank you very much for stepping in. And I'm Nick Francesco, and you've been listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites. We will be back next week. Join us online. Join us wherever you find us, asking us questions as we stand in line at the grocery store. We'll be back next week with a whole lot more Soundbites right here on the truly great, member-supported Jazz 90.1.